Good morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. Anybody has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you silence them now, it's not to disrupt the rest of the meeting, we'd appreciate it. If you'd stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, we've been doing that double for forever.
Okay.
But most of them are when they have an environment suits or not.
Okay, that's what I thought too, but I wasn't sure.
All right, next up on our agenda this morning will be item number 4. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of the agenda for December the 5th, 2017. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda?
Do you have changes to propose, Mr. Chairman?
Now, why don't you go ahead and give us the proposed changes.
Okay. In the interest of time, we have several people here that are on the clock, if you will. Item number 10, first off, the Story County Business of the Year, we'd like to continue that to the second meeting in January, which would be January 16th, when the recipient can be here. In his place, we'd like to move item number 26. This is potential approval of a body camera purchase to the Sheriff's Office. So that would be the change. We would also...
You're going to move it to where?
In place of 10, we'll move 26 up to 10.
Oh, so body cameras will come in instead of business of the year. The deputy district attorney and myself are working with Switch on some easements, so we would like to continue item 27. We don't have a specific date on that one. We're waiting to hear back from Switch. This is on 12 utility poles. So that one would be continued to a future date. And then, again, in the interest of time, we've got apparently multiple legal counsels present for two agenda items. These would be agenda items 28 and 30, and we would like to slot those immediately after item 11, which is the WMDB presentation by Mr. Radio and Mr. Lawson. So I hope that's all of them, but...
It was what? Which item in 30?
28 and 30.
20, oh.
28
and 30. But 28, you said that you want to continue to a future date.
I don't believe I said 28.
26.
27 we want.
27 we're going to continue to a future date.
Oh, okay.
There you go. And then 28 and 30, we'll go ahead and move right up after item 11.
And I apologize for all the changes. We're just trying to make it flow in the best interests of the public.
Okay. All right. This includes all of the changes. Okay. Public comment on today's agenda, Ms. Byrd.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. I'd like to request that the item in the consent agenda that is on the personnel and administrative policies be moved off consent onto open agenda, not necessarily today. Reason is you've got a number of items in there which I have questions on, but may bear further review. Whistleblower, it looks like you're separating that out and creating a standalone policy. That's good, but I have a couple of questions about that. You've got the ethics policy in there. To the extent that your policies are how you govern, or policies and ordinances, but policies in particular, are how you govern, I think that given recent issues that we need to also be able to look at and comment on those as part of the agenda.
All of these policies are currently in place. This mm-hmm. is like updated verbiage or stuff, or changes that are required by either federal or state law.
Okay, and I would appreciate being understanding which things were, in fact, changed for what reason. As I said, it looks like you're pulling out the whistleblower portion from another policy into its own standalone policy. Just making a request. Thank you.
Well, before you leave, if you want to make a request, we'll pull it down and talk about it. If we approve the consent agenda, it's approved as it's presented.
So.
And we can pull out policy 222 and any others that you're interested in within item 7, or item 7-1, if you wish. So if you want to talk to whistleblower, we can pull that out.
Okay, I'd like to quickly, not to take up a lot of time. Whistleblower, employment of families, ethics. I saw a lot of changes under ADA.
Hang on, let me catch up with you. Okay, so 212 Code of Ethical Standards,
mm-hmm.
222 whistleblowing, what else?
Employment of relatives.
Okay, 210.
Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you.
So the recommendation from staff on that request would be to pull policies.
And again, it doesn't have to be today. You've got a jammed agenda at a future time. Okay.
Well, otherwise, they're going to get approved today.
So we want to pull 210 and 212?
Yeah, let's pull 210, 212, and 222 to allow public comment. Okay.
Okay. Any other public comment regarding today's agenda? Okay, if I can get a motion to approve today's agenda with the changes that were submitted by the county manager.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve today's agenda for December 5, 2017. With the noted changes being under 7.1, consent agenda, to remove items 210, employment of relatives, number 212, code of ethics standards, and item 222, whistleblower protection. And also, we will continue item 10, a resolution honoring Bruce and Linda Larson. We'll move that to January 16th, 2018, here in this courtroom at 10 o'clock. And we will move item 26 to replace item 10. And we will, item 27 will continue to a later date. And we will then move item 28 and 30 to follow item 11. Okay. I believe that's it.
Yes, it is. Great. Thanks, Commissioner McGuffey. Okay. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved and second to approve the agenda as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to item number 5. This is discussion on possible action. Approval of the minutes for October the 17th, 2017. You guys have any questions on the minutes? Any public comment regarding the minutes for October the 17th? Hearing none, if I get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for October 17th, 2017.
Second.
Moved and second to approve the minutes for October 17th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. On to number 6. This is discussion of possible action. Approval of the minutes for November the 7th, 2017. Do you have any questions on the minutes? Anything from the public? Any public comment on this? Hearing none, motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for November 7th, 2017.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve the minutes for November 7th, 2017. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, moving along now to item number 7. This is a consent agenda. Is there any other public comment regarding number 7, the consent agenda? Hearing none, if we can go ahead and get a motion to approve this after pulling the three items.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda with, as noted, removing items from number 1, remove items number 210, 212, and 222.
Right. We have a motion. Second?
Second.
Been moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, Councilor, should we take these in order then on the consent agenda at this time?
I would. That's just normally what we do.
That's normal.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Austin, are you prepared to go ahead and speak to these?
Yes.
Okay, come on up. So we're going to go ahead and Ms. Bardi, if you had specific questions, do you want to approach also? We'll start off with policies and procedures of 210, employment of relatives.
It talks to the chart of consanguin. I can't say the word. How do you say that? Consanguinity. Yes, it's that thing. It talks about that, and yet it isn't in there for me to even understand what that means. That's first. Secondly, the way it's described, it's very, very short policy, and I know that we're a very small county, and it's almost impossible to avoid hiring a relative. But according to what I read in the very short description, it's possible to report to your immediate supervisor that it's a relative, but not to two levels above based on the way it's written. Is that the intent?
Thank you, Austin Osborne, for the record, HR director. I think I'm understanding the question correctly. Yeah, it's a pretty standard policy you want in any company or county that your supervisor is not your relative. And so you can have a supervisor in the organization and then have another person working below that, you know, down the road the way we do. But I think I'm answering that question. It's pretty simple.
So basically your immediate supervisor is not a blood relative or even by marriage. Right?
That's correct.
Okay.
You should look at the way it's written because it makes it sound like you can't.
Yeah, here you
are. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. And so my question on whistleblower, it was taken out of another policy. Is this based 100% on federal and state? Is there anything added or deleted from this that is different from federal or state?
Right now, our whistleblower policy is contained within the policy on reporting convictions. It really doesn't belong in there. So it's the same language that we've had before. It's moved out of reporting convictions into its own policies, and you just have a policy with one thing in it instead of a policy with two things in it. The whistleblower policy that we have is actually the text that comes from Poole. And this one, I did not make any custom changes to that policy. Poole, our insurance representative, recommends that specific text because their attorneys and team have vetted it through federal and state regulations to make sure it's done appropriately.
Okay. And then the ADA one has been substantially altered. And my question, and I saw a lot of the changes, which makes sense, but one of the questions I have there is, can anyone... To the extent that it says that medical records are private, can't be kept with personnel records, can only be accessed by authorized ADA or supervisor for specific reasons, and the person needs to be informed when that's happening. Understand that, that's pretty standard. But do other people in the county have the right to view those records that, and are those records online to where they can be viewed by people that shouldn't be viewing them?
Well, to answer the first one, pretty straightforward. If the person has a need-to-know basis and that person's a supervisor, they would have the right to review certain records. So if you're a director of community development and there's a reasonable accommodation that's needed in that office for a particular employee, then that community development director would be able to review the record with the HR director to see what kind of reasonable accommodation can we make based on the illness. So in that case, yes, but it is not open to everybody. You know, we can't just say, hey, I want to see my coworkers, records or anything like that. So there is some yes to that. I didn't quite understand the online question. I'll ask for clarification. What we have here, too, I just want to clarify. Right now we have, as we are speaking, the PULPAC's policies on ADA. I've worked with Deputy District Attorney Keith Loomis. There's some issues I found in there, and I've talked with him. And his recommendation, which I strongly support, is why don't we use the most stringent of the ADA regulations, and that is what the EEOC of the federal government uses for their employees. What better source could you possibly have for that in making sure that you're compliant with ADA? So that is what we've done. And so we have the most stringent and the most compliant and clean ADA regulations that possibly could exist right from the, what the EEOC uses.
Well, Ms. Bard, your question about access online, there's no access online to employee, to personnel records.
Within the county?
Right.
By county admins? Okay, just asking.
Yeah.
So it's secure. If I have a medical issue, or if I have a medical record as an employee in the county, nobody gets to see them except you or my supervisor.
That would be it. And our medical records are not kept online. They're not kept in an electronic form.
Okay.
They're very secure and in paper form.
All right, that's it then. Thank you.
Okay. You had asked for 212 to be pulled on ethical standards.
Oh, ethical standards. That didn't get very, that didn't get altered all that much, and point it out. I'll just leave that for now. That's a later question. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. With that said, now if I can get a motion to go ahead and approve these items.
All three?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to approve items located in the consent agenda, number one paragraph, number one paragraph, those items being 210, employment of, and abuse, drug abuse, 210, employment of relatives, sorry, 212, code of ethical standards, and number 222, whistleblower protection.
Okay. I'll second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve these. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number 8. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. I'll start on the right side of the room with Sheriff Antonoro.
Just a couple of quick things. During the month of November, I'm sure everybody saw a bunch of hairy deputies running around. We're all back to normal. We did that for a fundraiser for Special Olympics, No Shave November. We were able to raise a little over $500 for them through that little endeavor. So we'll be making that presentation to them a little bit later this month. The other thing that have is just give you an early heads up, working with the Attorney General's office through their Attorney General's office and the DA through the drug take back program. The AG's office is in the process of trying to obtain several incinerators that could be used for the destruction of the prescription drugs from the take back and other contraband. We are tentatively on the list of being the recipient of one of those. So as that develops, I'll keep you apprised and we'll move forward with that in the appropriate manner. We will have to do a little bit of preparation work for the incinerator. That costs us nothing. The prep work, the Attorney General's office tells me they have some resources available to help with that. And that would be just making sure that it's a fence-secured area, there's a concrete pad for it to sit on, and it may be a requirement to put some type of a roof cover over the top of it. So just a lean-to type of a thing from the sounds of it. But that's on the horizon, and as it develops and we need to bring it forward to get the final approval, I'll be back with it.
All right. Thanks, Sheriff.
Do you get a lot of requests to have prescriptions dropped off?
I couldn't tell you total quantity, but we have a whole room full of drugs that needs to be disposed, either contraband, cases that have been disposed of, or, yes, we get quite a few things. A lot with the coroner calls. You know, a lot of the families bring in the prescription meds of the deceased, and so we've got quite a bit of stuff. We've been trying to hash out an agreement with Carson City to do some of that stuff because of the changes in rules and regulations. We've not been able to take it down to the mortuary to use in their incinerators. So we've got a backlog going, and my understanding is correct. The AG's program, the there's 506 that they're getting that will be placed throughout the state. Washoe County would have been the first ability to grab this particular incinerator, but because they have the whole Clean Air Act in Washoe County, they don't want to have to go through the rigmarole and headaches that they have to go to on a county level for it. So since we're right next door, they offered it to us next, and it'll end up being a multi-county thing. Carson City already has their own incinerator, but Washoe County may bring stuff to us asking us to burn it. They'll be responsible for doing it. It'll just be situated at our location. Same thing, Lyon County may bring stuff over to us to incinerate their product here. So it is a multi-jurisdictional use, but there shouldn't be any cost or anything involved with those other agencies using it. And if there is a fee for any gas usage to burn that, just like everybody else around us, I'm sure we can parcel those costs out to the agencies that are using it.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. All right. Our director down at the community chest and library, Eric Schoen. You going to be flagging for UnDOT later today?
So good morning, happy holidays for the record, Eric Schoen of Community Chest. Good to see you all. Just a couple of quick updates. One, our community center is continuing, the construction of that is continuing apace. We are really, really excited. We're at the point where we're almost fully weathered in. I think they connected the power on Monday, so I think we have heat and lights in the new part of that. Once we have the elevator installed later this month, we should be able to completely close the foyer and have it completely closed in. And then in February, we should be completely done. And I have to tell you, it's really, really exciting to be in that space. I know, Pat, you've seen it as well. The views from the library and from inside the center have been preserved. They're million-dollar views. I mean, if you could buy pictures like these, they would auction off for a lot of money because it's just a beautiful picture, scenic all the way around, and I think it'll become one of the favorite spots in Story County once it's fully built out. So that's number one. Number two, Story County residents have always been known for being generous at the holidays, with us anyway, and this year is continuing that trend. We have had people really excited about adopting our angels off of our angel trees. We have two angel trees, one at the Catholic Church and one in the post office, and so if folks still want to adopt angels, they're still on there through this week, and then we'll start distributing those next week. As well, people have been really generous in giving us money and food so that we can distribute enough food for folks in the holiday food baskets. So those are the two updates. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Great. Thank you. All right. Over our planning department, Kathy Canfield. Anything today?
Stacy's in the same room.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Good morning. I just have a couple quick updates for you. One, that we have submitted our census local address update information. So I know several of you are getting paperwork from that. So that's all been submitted. The second thing is we've also submitted the paperwork for our community rating system for the flood insurance along the Truckee River. This is mostly for that area. We've received, they've received the information. They've asked a couple questions about some of the annexed area that we annexed from Washoe County. So we have that information ready for them, and I'll be turning that in later today. And then the last item is an item that we've had on the agenda that's been continued for quite a while, the IAA development that's out in Tri. That project, that they had submitted a variance, and we had kept working with the applicant, they are withdrawing that application. So we've worked with them and determined that their project is in is conforming to the zoning, and there's a couple additional landscaping items that they're going to be doing, but that project is being withdrawn. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Kathy. All right. Our director of the Story County Senior Center, Stacy Gilbert.
Good morning. I just have two quick updates. We started fundraising for a dishwasher last December, starting on Christmas with Christmas on the Comstock. We met our goal this year. We raised $8,000 for a dishwasher, so that's on its way right now. And Thursday, December 21st, we're having a Christmas lunch. If you guys would like to attend that noon, please RSVP. Any questions?
December 21st.
December 21st.
Right. Director of Security, Melanie Keener.
Nothing today, thank you.
Director of the Virginia City Tourism Commission, Jenny Dawson.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. You know, the Virginia City Tourism Commission's primary role and mission statement is to drive traffic and visitation here to Virginia City. And one of the ways we do that is through special events. And, you know, we all put on a lot of special events, and we do our best to cross-promote and integrate with our local merchants. I think if you were up here on Saturday, you'd say that we integrated pretty well with our local merchants if you looked at the amount of lights that were shining bright in town. I was pretty proud of our town on Saturday. The amount of Christmas spirit that we showed makes it one of my favorite events. And the parade was great. Concerts were great. The craft fairs that was going on here in town. Just a lot of activities. It's a great way to finish up the year with a good feeling. Moving on into next year, we'll be releasing the special event calendar on our first meeting of the VCTC in January. We'll have our event cards out for distribution at that time. But with that, we will not be meeting the VCTC here in the month of December. So we have a bit of a quorum issue there, so we're going to go ahead and skip that and push everything to January. And then finally, I'll give an update on the V&T Railway Commission. Things are going great there. We're finishing up a very strong Polar Express season. There are only tickets available just after Christmas and before New Year's. There's a few tickets on a few of the trains. And then we're meeting on December 14th, and where we'll be actually reviewing a lot of the operating contracts going into next year and starting our business evaluation, if you will, of the entire organization so we can put changes in place going into 2018. So that's all I have. Okay.
Any questions for Danny?
No, thank you, Danny. But, yeah, Saturday's parade was a huge success. As tough as it is going up to the city of Sparks having a parade on the same day, we held our own. All right. Let's see here. We have the Honorable Justice of the Peace, Eileen Harrington, in attendance today. Anything from the judge today?
Good morning, everybody. Eileen Harrington, Justice of the Peace. Tying in with what the sheriff was just saying, I attended an opioid crisis summit last week that was hosted by the Attorney General's office. And the incinerators that he was talking about, the Attorney General's office just got some money to place them throughout the state. And I had my court services officer attend with me because she oversees all of our pretrial services and alternative sentencing services. And right now, you know, Las Vegas is in the thick of it. We're starting to see more and more cases involving overdoses, particularly opioid-related drugs, specifically fentanyl being one of them. And we learned a lot about how dangerous this is to our community. Of course, fortunate to say Nevada is number 4 in the nation for overdose deaths. And right now, opioid overdoses are accounting for over 65% of those deaths. And unfortunately, you're looking at an age group of about 18 to 25, so it's affecting our younger citizens. So we're looking at this. We learned a lot, and the incinerators are needed because some of the drugs that we need to have that we confiscate, or I don't, but enforcement does, and the drugs they're so deadly, especially fentanyl, that a speck smaller than a penny can kill a person. And that goes for the officers that are actually confiscating the drugs, so they have to actually incinerate these drugs. So we learned a lot. It was interesting. And like I said, Officer Stevens attended with me, and we learned a lot. Any questions?
Thank you.
And also on the consent agenda today is our grant for the video arraignment system that we're going to have put into the courtroom here. Okay?
That's a very good idea. Thanks. Great. Thank you, Judge.
You're welcome.
The Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Our Director of Planning and Human Resources, Austin Unkrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Austin Osborne for the record. Two updates I want to give you and the public. We're still working on our lands bill for the Comstock up here. I've been doing that for quite some time. There's more back and forth going on. I'm working with the Porter Group, our lobbyists in Washington, working with Amade's office, Sue Porter's group, and directly, and then also now directly with the cadastral survey folks from the Bureau of Land Management. And we're trying to come up with a map that everybody's going to be satisfied with that can be rolled into the next lands bill to try to get cleanup in the language so we can get land that people already live on and have their homes located on transferred over to them so there's no longer clouded titleship here in Virginia City and Gold Hill. The BLM is cooperating, and we do hear good news that John Roos, the director from the state who's been in Washington for about the last 9 months, is coming back to Nevada. And he's been a huge help for us in the Bureau of Land Management trying to get some of the stuff moved through. Lastly, down in Mark Twain, the Sark Carson Water Subconservancy Group and the contract that we have chosen, J.E. Fuller, with that group out of Arizona, and myself and Jason Wisberke from Public Works spent half a day down in Mark Twain looking at culverts and drainages and looking at maps and plans. And J.E. Fuller is now beginning their plan, $350,000 project that will include Mark Twain Story County and Mark Twain Lyon County to have a consistent, comprehensive flood mitigation plan between the two. And then ultimately, when this is done, then the county will be able to look at our options for actually developing flood mitigation in that area. So it was a huge help to go down there and see these folks involved. And we did meet some residents that came out and asked some questions. And one thing that's really great about J.E. Fuller, and one of the reasons we chose them, is because down in Arizona, they had a very strong reputation for working with local residents in these sorts of projects and trying to come up with something that works. And they did the same thing in Johnson Lane, Douglas County. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Austin?
That's great. Thank you, Austin. Mm-hmm.
Our special counsel, Robert Morse.
Nothing at this time, thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to welcome back our district attorney, Ann Langer. So, been out on a short leave, so welcome back. And
thank you. I just wanted to add to what the sheriff said and to what the justice of the peace said on the heroin problem. I guess I have a seat here so I can just sit right here. So virtually what has happened is a lot of people with the opioid problem started out as a simple surgery. So some of these people got addicted during surgeries. Other situations where somebody's had a surgery, they have extra Vicodin, and somebody gets a hold of it like their kids and sells them on, and they become street drugs. Also, the northern Nevada area, probably over the last 5 years, the heroin problem has increased 3,500%. And one of the things when you talk about this age group of 18 to 25 years of age, this is a really sad thing to say, but the kids, number one, started out probably taking a pill or two when their parents did have some sort of surgery, and they didn't want to get meth mouth. So a lot of these people that were using methamphetamine before knows that the education regarding methamphetamine shows that you lose your teeth, your mouth, and so they started smoking heroin. So this is a real problem for everyone. So with the sheriff's plan, it's good just to destroy these drugs, keep them off the street, and the next group that probably they're going to be looking into is that when people have surgeries, to start looking at the amount of pills that are actually people are being prescribed. And the medical industry is going, wait a minute, you know, we have to do our own job here, and, you know, we can't stop these people from getting them to the streets if these people need these drugs here. So it is an epidemic, and, you know, the education in this area is important for everybody, and the fact that we have a way to destroy the excess of these drugs is really important. So that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Ann. County Manager Pat Whitten.
Several items, Mr. Chairman, thank you. By approval of your consent agenda earlier in the morning, I just want to make note to everybody that there will not be a December 19th meeting for our second meeting of the month. Next meeting is currently scheduled for January 2nd, although we do reserve the right for special meetings if there are pressing issues between now and then with proper notice. I want to remind everybody that the county hosted annual holiday party, I guess I'll be politically correct for once, happens this Friday, December 8th at 5 o'clock at Piper's Opera House. Everybody is invited, and everybody is invited to bring a friend. That includes even our friends from Sparks. I'm told that there will be heavy appetizers from the Roasting House, which I think is the generation just below me, i.e. Jesse Fain's way of saying yummy appetizers. So there should be some good food and fellowship and company there. Jason Wisbecki is out staying busy, so he asked me to provide you his update. I'll just be brief with these. The parking area in the Highlands at the mailboxes has been filled, graded, and compacted, and is ready for paving when we get warmer weather. They're working, although we have some funding issues with some equipment we need to rent. They'll be working on hopefully starting the demolition of the deck on the Black and Howe building as early as next Monday. Jeff and Jason, and I don't know if Denny was out there for this or not, surveyed it yesterday, and there's a piece of equipment that's going to cost us about $1,400. So Denny and I will be discussing payment on that. So, but if we can get that deck cleared off before we destroy the foundation, then we can go from there. He's pretty much got most of the equipment ready for the upcoming snow season. Heavily involved. I go down probably at least once a day on the sewer pipeline project. I always see Mike down there, and often and usually I see Jason as well. And then I'll be getting into paving here in a bit with another report. So that's Jason's report from Public Works. Had an interesting meeting yesterday with the traffic signal folks at Carson City. As I mentioned before, we were getting our first ever traffic light out at Electric Avenue and USA Parkway. NDOT basically builds it and then hands it over to us and says it's all yours. So they do it all over the place. So we were looking for a skilled professional local government jurisdiction that could help us out with servicing. Carson's got a pretty attractive offer on the table. Basically, there's some concern and there's quite a bit of distance to travel out there, even with USA Parkway. But it is going to be time and materials, and the bulk of the materials, the expensive things sound like they will be paid for by MDOT as we go forward. So the estimate I saw was about $6,400 a year. There are some other options that we can fold into this that we're also considering for some radar controlled signs here in Virginia City. So we're working with Carson right now. Just got an interesting email from our tax analyst, Tom Gransbury. I'll read it very quickly. These are our September sales and use tax numbers that came in. For SCCRT, in-state collections were strong. Out-of-state were down compared to August. But overall, the 3 months of fiscal year 18 is $33,000, almost $34,000 ahead of last year's 3 months. BCCRT is $11,000 ahead for the first 3 months. And Denny will like this one, just in the first 3 months, which would be a big part of the season for him. The 1/4 cent option tax for the BCTC, also the 1/4 cent option tax for the BMT rail, is $17,600 ahead of the first 3 months of the quarter last year. So we're tracking pretty well. So that's a quick update there. I want to give you, Mike's down at a meeting getting chewed out for something that I'll mention here in a minute. But I'm going to give you an update on the sewer pipeline project. As of last Thursday, so this information is 5 days old, we were 81 days into the project with about 400 total days, so we have about 319 more days to do. They're pretty much done coming up from Mucker Street and R Street up to H&I, pretty well tied in on the south end. And they're now working G and also E. We can talk about E in just a minute. Paving is probably the biggest thing. We stopped momentarily to take a look. I think I talked about this at the last meeting. It makes little sense to us the way the contract was bid to have Ames be responsible for, on average, about a 7-foot strip where they had to tear up asphalt, lay a pipe, fill, compact, and then repave, when all around it, on many of our streets here in Virginia City, the roads are failing and crumbling. So we did some pretty detailed analysis through Jason and Mike Northern and also Jennifer Hernan with Far West, and we're collaboratively working with Ames to basically pave as much as it makes sense to, wherever it makes sense to, cohesively, so there's not seams, places for water intrusion, those types of things. So we're going to do it collaboratively. And currently our estimate for our portion of it, is between $300,000 and $500,000. That's actually a pretty bargain price. I was prepared for a lot more, and our comptroller was too. We have funding sources identified for $300,000 of it through some budget maneuvers that we did on the current budget. So we're looking for the other $200,000, hoping we don't need it, but we might as well do it right while we're doing it. It's kind of the approach we're taking on that. So we're about 18% complete. The paving, by the way, could begin. We're probably going to hold off on a lot of paving until spring. The minimum sustained temperature before you can put down pavement and have it comfortably, confidently adhere is 50 degrees. And we're not there right now. But we do get some of those days occasionally. It looks like our paver will be cruise construction. So they're on standby, and we would hope to be able to get the heavy trafficked roads, such as Washington in particular right now, paved, where we've got school buses on there and other things. Still trying to tie in some of our old drainage into a long, difficult process, about 4 NDOT storm drains that are at the south end of C Street that currently dump into our sewer system that we've been trying to get off. So that's still a possibility. And lastly, I kind of want to talk about East Street and the Savage Mine area. The reason why I said Nevin was down, actually Nevin, Sherry and Mike are down, getting kind of read the riot act right now, is last Thursday we made a kind of an anticipated but still inadvertent discovery of some underground structure that's associated with the Savage Mine. As is required by our programmatic agreements with both our funders at USDA and SHPO, and to a lesser degree BLM, we stopped all work in the area. We've got, if you see trucks around with the name Broadbent on there, that's the archaeological firm that are the on-site specialists. They're in the process now of cataloging. I took several pictures. Unfortunately, Mike and Sherry are kind of getting reamed a little bit because we put those on Facebook. We were pretty excited about them. And I guess you can't do that quite that fast. You have to. Broadband has 48 hours to notify USDA, who has 48 hours to notify somebody else, and it goes through a whole bureaucratic process. But long story short, cool stuff. Great project, and that's the end of my report if you have no questions.
Questions?
Yeah.
The Bell and Howell building, did you kind of tear down those rock walls over there? Or?
Not yet, oh. Commissioner McGuffey. If you remember last winter, when we had heavy snow loads, we had some major stress and potential failure of the deck on the Black and Howell.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. It was sagging pretty bad. So the plan right now is to get the deck off so we don't damage anything else. It's unsafe to go underneath right now. Okay. And then once we get the deck off, we'll bring in probably Paul Ferrari as a structural engineer to say the foundations, which have little to no real historic value, it's mostly cinder block and concrete, but we'll take a look and see if they have historic value or not. Bert with the Comstock Historic District, subject to commission, Historic District Commission approval, has said if you have to take it out, take it out. But we want to get the deck off and see where we are from that.
Okay. Now, the other more of a comment was I was over on Washington Street the other day. They pretty much moved on to the side streets, I guess, but Washington's pretty much open. Other than the dirt and gravel left from the digging. Yeah. And it was kind of a challenge to get going up the hill with all that loose gravel, you know. So that might be a problem in the winter as well. It was great to see. I was tickled to see those pictures of the tunnel that they exposed. It's another kind of exciting part of our history that's showed up to say hi.
And I'm glad you mentioned Washington. Washington, again, for the reasons I mentioned, heavily traveled, sloped. We are aware of that. I would tell you right now, Washington's done to, I think, only two ice streets, maybe even a little below that. It might only be done to Tunnel 7 and L, as far as Washington itself. But that is our highest priority to try to pave if we hit that sweet spot of being able to do it.
Yeah.
The rest of us will probably have to suffer with quite a bit of mud and ruts and whatnot, but this contractor is amazing. I'm so glad that Ed took the, Councilman Lawson took the time to join us today because, you know, I got to tell you, sir, there's a company out there that built USA Parkway that's phenomenal. I mean, their customer service, their attitude, their project foreman came in on Saturday and spent about 9 hours on an excavator cleaning up stuff. And he did that on Saturday because that's off in his quiet. Sure. And it was his way of doing things that were maybe outside the scope of the project and maybe needed to get done at no extra cost to the county. They're phenomenal. So that's it.
Great. Thanks, Pat. County Clerk Stevens. Nothing today? All right. That's going to go ahead and conclude our committee and staff reports. And we'll move on now to item number 9 on the agenda. These are board comments. We'll take no action, public comment. Down to the far end of the table is Mr. Gilman.
Nothing today, thank you, sir.
Mr. McGuffey.
Yes. So I had a little surprise. It was just before Thanksgiving. Senator Cortez Masto invited me over to her office in Reno to kind of sit down and see what our concerns were. And I had Pat go with me on this. And we sat there for well over an hour just chatting and talking about what Story County's looking for. And, of course, we focused primarily on our zip code issue that's sitting and installed in Washington, D.C., kind of gave her some information on what it's all about. She was kind of wide-eyed when she realized that we were losing tax dollars just through the internet and businesses working out in a tri that don't report that they're a business or a Story County business. And then the other issue was the lands bill. I could kind of give her a little more information on what our land bill issue is. We're not like some of the other large rural counties looking to grab a bunch of acreage. We just have Story County is unique that we have a little plots of BLM land scattered throughout Virginia City and the American Flats and all that. What large areas we have, we're not really interested in. We just want to clean up our plot maps here in town to speak of in the surrounding areas. So she was very open to that, and I think she's sincere in saying that she'll do what she can to help us, you know, get our agenda through. So she wants to shine anyway. So you want to add to that, Pat, or?
No, I think you covered it very well. It's probably one of the most relaxed
conversations
I've ever had with a federal elected official.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a very nice person. Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks, Jack. I went ahead and yesterday I took a tour of the Virginia City wastewater collection system for the first time in its entirety, and it's amazing how fast it's moving. For the residents in that neighborhood, it doesn't seem like it's moving that fast. I realize that, but the equipment that's going on and the manpower it's unbelievable on what's going on down there. So they're doing a great job, and as Pat mentioned, you know, Ames Construction is doing a fabulous job, and they're very easy to work with, and they're very amenable to making changes if necessary, you know, at a moment's notice. Any of those of you who might follow college sports, you'll notice that the University of Nevada at Reno is rated number 22 in the nation today.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. They haven't been rated in many, many years. Maybe back to the days when our comptroller, Mr. Gallagher, played for the Wolfpack himself down there. I still think he holds one of the records in the books down there. But anyway, congratulations to the Wolfpack. Yeah. That's all I have. And we'll move on now. Item 10, we've already continued to January the 16th. And so we're going to go ahead and move item number 26 up into its place right now. And this is discussion of possible action, approval of the purchase of body cameras for the Story County Sheriff's Office. So, Sheriff Antonoro, take the lead. And I think he's brought a representative with him today. So go ahead and give us a little information.
Good morning, thank you. This is Mike Pishoda from VView, the company that we're recommending for this. Just a little bit of the history. As you're aware, in the 2017 legislative session, the legislature mandated the use of body cameras effective July 1st of 2018. We actually started this venture back in 2015 at that legislative session when they were talking about it. At that point in time, working with our IT and everything, we came up with implementation cost of about $80,000. Since then, technology has improved, access to the cloud has improved, and everything. We went out after the mandate in the 2017 session, checked with a bunch of different vendors, tried out a bunch of different products, and Mike's product is the one that we have looked at as far as being the most cost-efficient, ease of operation, the best, basically the best program that we can get for the money that we're spending. And the documentation that you were provided, Mike can correct this if I'm wrong, but I believe it's a three-year contract with a two-year option. Basically a five-year contract that allows for at roughly $10,000 a year. Mr. Loomis had a few concerns about the contract, so which is why we brought Mike here to answer any specific questions that you may have. In my read of the contract, it didn't look like there was anything more than what I find in the contract of the washing machine that I bought from Home Depot. So that's something that Mr. Loomis and you guys and Mike can hash out, but out of the bids that we obtained and products that we looked at. That's what we're recommending is the VVU product under the terms that are stated in the contract.
The total amount on the contract, does that include the two-year extension?
I think there was a typo on that contract, but Mike, correct me, I think it says 36 month, but there is a two-year option, basically making it a five-month contract for $51,940 something. Yeah.
And the reason for that is to add an automatic refresh of all hardware at the 30-month mark for the agency.
Okay. Mr. Loomis, you have an issue with the contract?
I do.
Yeah, I don't think this is Mr. Pesciotta's contract. He's the sales guy. Somebody in the company itself put together the contract. And, you know, it's I review a lot of contracts, and typically a contract that's presented on behalf of a selling agency is fairly oppressive, but typically you can live with it. And so this one is more oppressive than most. And it starts out with the idea that it has a provision in there that says, any additional or different terms set forth by customer, that's the county, are expressly rejected and shall be void and without effect. This contract has four indemnity provisions under which the county is required to indemnify and hold harmless VVU under a variety of different situations. I've never seen a contract that has four indemnity provisions in it before. There is no provision for VVU to indemnify the county on any behalf. If the county is not happy with the way that VEVU performs under the contract, our remedy is limited to seeking 12 months worth of subscription payments back from VEVU, and that's it. If there's damages, we're precluded. We have to hold them harmless for any damages. The contract is internally inconsistent in that it has internal references to parts that make little sense. There's a reference that the contract includes Exhibits A and B. Exhibit B is not included. I've been told that the estimate is what constitutes Exhibit B, but that's not confirmed anywhere in the contract. There's a the agreement gives VEVU the right to assign its rights under the contract. There's no similar provision for the county. We have to get VEVU's permission to do anything along those lines, which that's just a typical provision. I don't really have a problem with that, but it's in there. There is no recognition that the county is subject to the public records law, and that is something that should be included in the contract to reflect the fact that the county is required to turn over records that are public, and typically what the state will do in their contracts is say, if the contractor wants to have something declared confidential, they put it on their documents. We don't have to guess about it. We can put a provision there that says that if somebody objects to our determination that a record is not public, that VEVU can come in and defend the case that might be brought to have the record declared public. There's a provision, the contract does not reflect the fact that under the Nevada Revised Statutes, contracts cannot go beyond the term of the sitting members of the Board of County Commissioners unless it's funded. Now, the way the state deals with that is they say that if at any point the legislature does not appropriate funds, the contract comes to an end. And that's something we could do also, but it's not done here. So those are my concerns. Told the sheriff's office I really couldn't recommend approval of this contract in its present form. I think that we could work with VEVU, I assume, and make it a better contract, but I'm not prepared to recommend it.
Thank you. Sheriff, this invoice for the $51,940, is that to be paid in full upon the completion of this contract, or do we pay them $10,000 a year as an ongoing?
We've been offered any number of options. If it's approved, we can pay it yearly, monthly, quarterly, or the whole thing all at once.
Okay. Because on page one of the services agreement there, it says 48/months, and then in parentheses, five-year agreement. Well, it's a five-year agreement. It should be 60 months, not 48.
I believe is that the $48 per camera?
Is that what that is?
Yes,
that's
it is. Correct.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I didn't know that was $48 per camera.
What's a scribble?
The dollar sign. Do you have a scribble on
here? Oh, yeah, that's a scribble. Okay. I didn't know that was a dollar sign.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Okay. Mike, do you have contracts with any other local jurisdictions?
In this area, we do not, but in the eastern part of California, Sierra Nevadas, we have several agencies, including up in Stockton PD. We have Stockton, Folsom, Auburn, and then towards the Bay Area, we have Napa County Sheriff, Brentwood, Fairfield, and several others. We have over 60 customers in the state of California. We have several in Arizona, but as of now in Nevada, we do not.
Have you found that their legal counsels come up with these same questions?
Occasionally. This is a standard contract that we've used since 2013 when we first put started putting data on the government Azure cloud. There have been revisions, and I'm more than happy to work with the DA's office to redline areas that need to be redlined and then take them to my legal counsel, my GC, and see what changes can be made to satisfy the DA's office. And that has happened on occasion. It's rare, but it does.
Could you supply one of your Folsom customer contact information to our DA's office?
Absolutely.
So they could call and ask them?
I could do several, yeah.
We've been in touch with other agencies that are using it and check their, as far as the usability of it, serviceability of it.
I think the DA's, or Assistant Keith, is primarily concerned about the agreement in the contract, not just so much how good the equipment is.
Yeah.
Which I think my question for you, Mr. Loomis, is that if this was on a five-year payment schedule, if after the first year or the second year, if you found out there was an issue with this contract, we could void the contract, discontinue the service.
Well, the contract would be good for 3 years, and then after that is subject to monetary approval by the board. But we need to have that provision in here.
Yes.
The sheriff and I have talked in depth on this. Mr. Loomis has provided me his concerns. I guess I'm heartened to hear Mike say, you know, we can try to work through the concerns. My concern with that is I would want to see us as a county and as the county's risk manager currently to move expeditiously. We've got a product that the sheriff likes. We've got a company with a very strong name backing it. Safari Land is well known throughout the industry. And I guess, again, I'm going to say nothing in life comes without risks, whether it's the warranty agreement on the sheriff's dishwasher, the deed of trust I signed, along with the note on refinancing my house. The real risk here is what could happen out there and why the legislature wisely implemented body cameras. And to drag this out through extensive discussions, negotiations, changes, red lines, concerns me greatly. I would just ask again that those be accomplished expeditiously, and hopefully we have you back here in early January, you know, with an agreed-to, cleaned-up contract that covers the things of key concern, or at least knows. I was prepared today, quite frankly, to say I get the concerns. I've read them. I also get the reputation of Safari Land. I get the flexibility that the sheriff has reviewed in depth, and I was prepared to go ahead and recommend approval. But if you're willing to go with red lines and processes expeditiously through your legal counsel and ours, maybe we can eliminate at least a lion's share of these.
Yeah. You know, generally, when we do that, it comes down, what the discussion is usually around is understanding of the actual the data itself and not necessarily the indemnities. But, I mean, if that's where you do have concerns, I understand it, and I can, you know, we can work.
Sheriff, with the legislation that was passed, what was the time frame that you mandated to go ahead and be up and operational with
July 1st.
Okay, so we do have a little bit of time to work with.
This is the sheriff's agenda item, I don't want to jump in on it, but I'd ask that we continue this to January 2nd, which keeps our eye on the target and hopefully gets us done.
Works for me.
You comfortable with that, Sheriff? Yep. Okay. And then, you can give him your concerns and see if we can come back with a more agreeable agreement.
I had a question about this estimate. The second line item, LE4, body-worn video camera, you got 20 of them. Is that $899.95? Is that for all 20 or is that each?
The cameras themselves are actually going to come without cost as part of the agreement.
Okay, so that $900 is for all 20?
That would be the retail value of the camera itself. But you got, based on the estimate, if you see, we actually waived the fees for the camera.
Okay, that's what that means. Okay. So now is that 20 cameras on top of the 18 in line one?
No, the 18 is the amount of users that are going to be uploading to the VView Solution Cloud, the government cloud. And that leaves two cameras as hot swaps in case somebody runs one over with a car or drops one into a river or something like that. You guys will have a hot swap camera. The sheriff will have a hot swap camera to put into the field immediately. So they'll basically be on the shelf, those two extra cameras.
Okay. Thank you.
Lance, you want to weigh in?
I do. I'd like to see that our legal department is comfortable with the contract before we move forward.
All right. Okay.
In the media, there's been issues about these cameras, and some of them are some officers refuse to wear them, or they don't turn them on when they're supposed to. Is those issues been addressed?
Well, it's addressed in as much as the legislature said that they will wear them, and our policies have already been in place enacted. Mandating the circumstances on which cameras are used and turned on. So we're already set for this internally. The recourse for the things that you've seen in the news is taking corrective measures and or whatever other legal ramifications there would be.
All right. Before we go ahead and ask to vote on a continuous... The continuation of this, is there a public comment regarding the body cams? Okay, hearing none, if I go ahead and get a motion to continue to January the 2nd?
If that's first
meeting in January?
If Mr. Chiodas and our legal counsel think we can hopefully come to an agreement before then, that would be my...
A little bit 3 weeks?
I would start working on it today if we could.
Keith's already identified his concerns. So it's just a matter of sharing the document and having you... Work with council.
Yep, I can have it back very quickly.
Okay, I got a motion to continue this to January the 2nd, 2018.
I'll make a motion to continue this item until January 2nd of 2018.
I'll second.
Moving to second to continue to January the 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Thanks for coming out, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, item number 11, discussion only. We'll take no action. We have a presentation by the Western Nevada Development District in attendance. We have Ron Radio and the Honorable Sparks City Councilman, Ed Lawson.
Easy on the honorable.
Hard-working city councilman and a friend of Story County.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Ron Radio, Western Nevada Development District. With me today is our WNDD Board President, Ed Lawson, who is on the City Council in Sparks. And we're here to talk about the update of the district's comprehensive economic development strategy, and in particular, our project listing. So, Ed, do you have anything?
First off, for the record, Ed Lawson, Sparks City Council and President of the Western Nevada Development District. I kind of feel like I'm preaching to the choir a little bit. You guys have used Western Nevada Development District to help Union Park down there, and everything's been very great with our relationship in Story County. I want to say thank you to Austin. He's been a great addition to our board. You guys are well represented by him. This is just a plea to you. We're preaching to the choir once again. Get your list updated for us. We have to turn in our updated list by March 1st, is it?
Yes.
So we have to have our new updated list by March 1st. And we suggest to anybody, what do you want to put in this list? Anything and everything, including the kitchen sink. If you're going to need a kitchen sink at some point in the future, put it on the list, because you can claim some of that back from some of the federal tax dollars. So we want to make sure that we're putting everything and in anything. As you know, we're working on some expansion of Sparks in the Lansville over in Washoe County, so we're doing the same thing. If you want to get a good representation of what you should include, go to the website and look up the list of projects, and especially look under Douglas County. I think they account for about half of all the projects listed, so they've thought of everything that they can think of. It's worth the time. Dust off some of those old projects that you may not have seen the light of day for many years, and put them in there also.
Okay, as a follow-up, with the comprehensive economic development strategy, we're in the process of doing an update. So that's why we're going out to these cities and counties, talking to them about that and the project listing. What I really want to emphasize is that USDA Rural Development in particular is a federal agency that many of our members go to for funding. And they can, at USDA Rural Development, they can assign up to 20 additional points on applications for either loans or grants. If the project is listed in that project listing in a multi-jurisdictional plan, or it meets one of the goals or strategies of a multi-jurisdictional plan, or SEDS meets that USDA requirement. And I know they've used it at USDA. They've assigned a couple of, they have assigned extra points for business and industry guarantee loan projects in Churchill and Douglas County, and they also assigned additional points to Winnemucca when Winnemucca did the upgrade on their water, wastewater treatment facility. We all know the grants are extremely competitive. This is one way to help applications coming out of the county from either the public sector or the private sector. If you can cite your project application in these various funding applications as meeting either a project listing status or as a goal or strategy, it just strengthens your applications, regardless of the funding source. That's the key thing here. Use it, look at it as being a multi-purpose document. So again, we're in the process of updating. We would like to have the individual project listings come back into the district January 30th of next year, 2018, not too far off. Any questions that you may have?
Not specifically. I'm going to assume, Austin, you've been working on this project on behalf of the county, and are you preparing that list to submit? You might give us a bit of detail.
Most announcement for the record. Yes, I've been on this district now not that long, just a few months. But I was working even all the way back to the point when I was working with Dean on their updates and their projects, and since then I've been reviewing the material, and back then even attended the SEDS meetings and those sorts of things for the updates. So Story County's list, it's not as long as Douglas's, but we don't have as many projects as Douglas, but we do have an extensive list, and going through that once again to update all kinds of things that we have going on across the county.
There was a project, I recall, that was in the works about perhaps a year and a half ago that Dean Haymore was involved with, and it had to do with the extension of the affluent pipeline between Reno Sparks and so I'm assuming that's still on the list, and
Yes, one of the projects we're looking at?
That project is on the list. In fact, we talked about that at the last meeting, about what, you know, where that's going, and it depends on a lot of different movement, of course.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. We'll look to you and your desk to help us understand what that list should look like.
All right, absolutely. And I'd be happy to, on, you know, at least my part of it, too. I think I can provide them, you know, this is what our portion of the list is, and provide you the whole document so you can compare what we have with our neighboring jurisdictions as well.
Yeah, that would all be what Oss is talking about, the project listing. That would all be part of the SES update. So that document will be available. Did I send this to you?
I do have that.
You have anything, Jeff?
No.
Okay, with that?
Thank you.
I think this is great. Austin, I'd suggest to you maybe we can put this on even like the January 16th agenda to inform the commissioners that this is what our list going into WNDD is. But also, since Councilman Lawson has taken the time to come up and visit, I think I would like to just personally extend to staff, you know, the hope that between Mr. Driscoll, myself, the Sparks Council, and the Story County Commission, that if we can find projects like we've discussed in the past, such as, you know, the La Posada route or anything else that we can use our silver bullet on that helps us all regionally, the Waltham Way Interchange, you know, in particular, I think we'd love to work collaboratively with you.
I think we are going to become fast friends in the next couple of years. We have a lot going on. A lot of these delightful problems that you guys have created for us that we are reacting to now, I think it's a good thing in the long run. I think our entire region is going to benefit from it. We're having a little growing pains right now in Washoe County, but we're getting there, and we're going to make something happen. And obviously, you guys are going to be a big part of that solution, I believe, not just for Washoe County, but all the surrounding counties from Story County. So we're going to be spending more time together for sure.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Ron. Thank you both for coming out there.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We're going to jump ahead now to item number 28. This is a special use permit 2017-044, request by the applicant Echo Compliance Corporation to construct and operate a medical waste thermal destruction plant and potential commercial power generation from waste. The subject property is located at 475 Pittsburgh Avenue, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, McCarran, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number is APN 005-051-54.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself from discussion or voting on this item as I have a pecuniary interest in some of the property that is the subject of the item.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman.
Good morning again, Kathy Canfield. This seems to be a timely discussion today. This is an application to construct and operate a medical waste thermal destruction plant. The property is located in Tri, and it is zoned heavy industrial. The facility itself will be consisting of a single building and two parking loading areas. The thermal destruction process itself doesn't involve burning, but heating the waste to high temperatures, in which chemically converts to a combustible gases and ash. As part of the process, it generates more energy than what they will be using for the process. So the project itself also is considered a power generation, which requires a special use permit also. The applicant has some different ideas for this excess power generation, but nothing's been finalized with any of that yet. The waste itself arrives at the facility by truck. It's either in a boxes or plastic containers. The waste itself isn't considered a hazardous waste by the definitions of NDEP or federal regulations, and this waste could actually be legally put into the landfill without any special treatment to it. The applicant's here to give a presentation of their project and the process that they're proposing. And just as a note, the Planning Commission recommended approval of the project. So I'll introduce the applicant and maybe take some questions after that, if that works.
Kathy, for the record, I'm Tony Dimple. I'm a project manager with McGinley & Associates out of Reno. So I just want to give a quick presentation on Equal Compliance, what their current operations are, as well as what they're planning to build here in Story County. All right, so in attendance today, we have Reza Taraverdi, who is the president and CEO of Equal Compliance Corporation. We have Greg Lopez, who is the chief operating officer. We have Amir Taj, who is one of the building designers. Again, I'm Tony Dimple, and I'm with McGinley & Associates. Paul Slocum, who's the owner of Montane Building Group, who is the design-build contractor, and Greg Schutt with Colliers International, who is the project coordinator. All right, so we'll talk about Eco Compliance's current operations. They're currently a medical waste pickup, storage, transfer, transportation, and disposal facility based out of California. They have current operations throughout all of California. They're fully insured, permitted, and regulated by the appropriate agencies where they operate. Currently, the operations include the collection of properly sealed bags or bins of the medical waste and transportation of the waste to a third-party disposal facility. The medical waste is collected from a variety of facilities, including hospitals, doctor's offices, dentists, vet's office, and pharmacies. What they're proposing to build in Story County is a thermal destruction facility for all the waste they collect, which will allow them to complete the process all the way from pickup, transportation, transfer, and to final destruction of this medical waste. And they're proposing to be located in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center. So before we get too much into their specific operations here in the county, I want to talk a little bit about medical waste because it sounds a lot worse than it is, and there's some taboo with it, and so just clearly explain what we're actually dealing with here. So medical waste, in its most basic definition, is just waste that potentially contains an infectious agent that may be a threat to the public if not properly handled. It's important to note that it doesn't represent an airborne threat. If you have a truckload of medical waste going down the highway, there's no chance of you driving next to it and picking up anything from that truck. Direct contact with the waste and a portal of entry is required for this stuff to represent a threat to humans. And what that portal of entry is it has to have a way to get inside your body, either through your mouth, through an open wound, or something like that. You have to touch it, and it has to be able to get inside your body. These types of waste are stored in largely stored in open, non-airtight containers at their point of generation, meaning your doctor's office or your dentist's office. So when you go into your doctor's office and you see that red trash can in the corner, that's lots of the medical waste is stored there. And it's primarily composed of solid waste. There's, little to no liquids. As Kathy said, it's not regulated as a Resource and Conservation Act hazardous waste. It doesn't mean it does have some biohazard associated with it. So the fact that it's not regulated as a hazardous waste doesn't mean that it doesn't take special handling. It just means by the definition of the Resource and Conservation Act, it's not a hazardous waste. The disposal is regulated by state and local agencies. The Nevada Division of Environmental Protection, which has jurisdiction in all of Nevada except Washoe and Clark County, they don't require anything special to be done with this waste. It needs to be handled and transported properly, but it can be disposed of in the landfill without any treatment. Washoe and Clark County, as well as many other states, do require thermal destruction or some type of treatment prior to disposal. And the key point there is that disposal requirements are dictated at the point of generation. So if you generate the waste in Washoe County or Clark County or California, you can't simply take it into another jurisdiction that allows you to put it directly into the landfill. You have to abide by the regulations at the point of generation. So even if it's generated in California and you remove it from California, you still have to dispose of it as dictated in that jurisdiction. The Occupational Health and Safety Administration also has regulations regarding the collection and the handling of medical waste. It's important to note that this type of medical waste goes down the 80 right now every day in trucks on its way to other disposal facilities in other states. So the medical waste to be processed at the Eco facility, there's five general categories. There's red bag waste, which is used medical gloves, paper towels, gauzes, bandages, and what I like to call small human tissue, which could be blood, teeth, cultures, removed warts or moles. It's basically the red trash can in a doctor's office or a vet's office where they dispose of anything that's touched a human or has any human tissue or anything on it. Sharps containers, this is all the containers in bathrooms and in many facilities where you put used needles and syringes. Trace chemotherapy waste, this is waste that's used in the administering of chemotherapy waste, the tubing, the gloves, and any other supplies used to actually administer the chemotherapy waste. It does not include the bulk chemotherapy medication itself, other than what trace amounts are on the gloves or the tubing and any unused medication. Pharmaceuticals, expired or tainted pharmaceuticals, kind of coincidental. This could include lots of the opioid type drugs that were discussed previously. And pathology waste, this is human or animal tissues or fluids generated during surgeries, autopsies, medical procedures, but it doesn't include entire bodies, animal or otherwise, or torsos or anything like that. This is just a quick picture of a typical doctor's office. You can see there's two up there at the top here. We have the sharps containers. That'd be one of the waste streams. And down here we have what would be considered the red bag waste. And you can see it's just in a non-airtight container right next to where the exam is taking place. So before we move on, are there any specific questions on medical waste that you guys like to ask right now? Any concerns with it? After that, we'll get into the specific operation of the Story County facility here.
Any questions?
I was at the Planning Commission when you did your thing, so you answered all my questions at that point.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right.
Go ahead, Tony.
We'll move on. So the Eco facility is going to be located in the Reno Tahoe Industrial Center. It's going to have a capacity up to 45 tons of medical waste per day, and it will, of course, operate in compliance with all local, state, and federal regulations. So this is the proposed location. This is 80 right here. This is USA Parkway moving south, so just right off of USA Parkway. They are going to have approximately 36 full-time staff once at full operational capacity. They'll have 15 to 19 deliveries of medical waste per week, and those are going to arrive during off-peak hours, so basically at nighttime between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. The medical waste is going to arrive in Gaylord boxes or plastic containers, and they're going to be at a minimum double contained, in many cases triple contained. So the medical waste will be placed inside these two containers in its own container at the very least, and in many cases it will be a bag within a container within these containers. So by the time it arrives at the facilities, it's double or triple contained. Those containers are transferred directly from the delivery trucks inside the facility. This medical waste is never stored outdoors. The medical waste is then transferred to carts and loaded into the thermal destruction unit, which we'll talk about in a bit more detail in a second. The Gaylord boxes are also disposed of in that thermal unit, and the plastic containers are washed and they are reused. So this is a quick facility site map. We have the building here. This is where all the equipment will be, and then we just have some trailer stalls, and the unloading of the medical waste will occur right here. That will be the loading docks. So the thermal destruction unit. The unit utilizes what's called gasification, which is not incineration, to thermally destroy the medical waste. And gasification is the process of chemically converting a solid into a combustible gas under specific conditions. So you make the temperature and the oxygen content appropriate, and the solids will actually convert into a combustible gas. Extremely high temperatures are achieved in this unit, removing any type of biohazard at this point. So any type of biohazard associated with this waste is gone at this point moving forward. The medical waste is converted to about 80% combustible gas and about 20% ash, and that ash is in the form of a saturated paste. The gas is combusted, later combusted, and used to make electricity. The exhaust of that combustion is routed to four pollutant control devices prior to being discharged to atmosphere. So the exhaust stream gets cleaned up, and we'll talk about that in a little more detail. The ash is packaged and bagged inside the facility and shipped off-site for sale as fertilizer. The thermal destruction process itself is self-sustaining. So once you get the process going, the heat content of the medical waste is enough to keep, to provide all the energy required by the process. So there's some natural gas burners present to get the process going and to account for any disruptions in the medical waste feed. But once you get it going and you continue to feed it medical waste, it doesn't require any outside energy to keep itself going. So this is a quick example of what the thermal destruction unit will look like. This won't be the exact one at the facility. But down here in Chamber 1, the medical waste goes in there. That's where the gasification occurs and the combustible gas is created. Combustible gas comes up into Chamber 2 where that gas is combusted, and then the exhaust comes out the stack here. But again, at the proposed facility, this stack will go into a series of air pollution control devices. It's not just going to be discharged straight to atmosphere. This is just a quick picture of the paste coming out from the bottom of the unit just to show that it's saturated. It's not creating a bunch of dust or anything. So the thermal destruction unit, the exhaust that comes out of Chamber 2 is going to go first to what's called a power package, and the heat from that exhaust stream is going to be used to create steam in a heat recovery boiler, and that steam is then used to make electricity in a steam turbine. The facility will actually be a net producer of power, so all the heat content in that medical waste eventually will be turned into electricity, making the facility a net producer of a significant amount of power. After that power package, that exhaust goes to four air pollution control devices, the first one being a lime and activated carbon reactor, then a baghouse, a wet scrubber, and then a wet pack tower polisher. Very robust air pollution control device setup. Those devices are used to remove acid gases, dioxins, particulate matter, and metals. And those are partially byproducts of the thermal destruction process, and some of those pollutants are just present in the medical waste itself. So this is a real quick flow diagram. So we have our thermal unit. We have medical waste in. We get ash paste out. This is the exhaust stream. It goes into the power package, which in turn creates electricity. And then that exhaust goes through each of these four air pollution control devices in series, with the last one being the wet pack tower, and then out a 70-foot exhaust stack located on top of the building. These two first units do the lion's share of the pollutant removal. These second two are really redundant units and polishers to remove anything that wasn't removed in here, but these two will do the vast majority of the work, and these ones are, in a way, backup and just redundant units. A quick note on air quality permitting. We will, of course, obtain the appropriate permit from the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection, which will have strict limitations on odors and visible emissions. In addition, prior to the NDEP issuing any type of permit, we have to demonstrate that we're not going to impact air quality outside the fence boundary above national ambient air quality standards, which are basically what the EPA has designated as safe to be exposed to, you know, your whole life. So anything outside the boundary of the facility, we have to demonstrate we're not going to impact the air quality. The facility is also subject to a federal code that dictates performance and operation for these types of facilities. This code is specifically for medical waste incinerators. Like I mentioned before, this is not an incinerator, but based on previous meetings with the appropriate regulatory authority, we will be subject to this as it stands right now. But the facility is not considered an incinerator. And lastly, I just want to talk about the potential for a release of medical waste. There really is no foreseeable scenario where a release of medical waste could pose any type of significant threat to the public. Any release, if it does happen, either within the facility or outside the facility, can be handled by ECO personnel. This is a service line they currently offer as response to these types of releases. But this type of release is basically like a garbage bin falling over. It's solid waste. It can't flow. So if it tips over in the facility, if it happens to be involved in a vehicle accident, it's not going to come out of these boxes and flow down the road or flow outside of the facility. Realistically, it's probably not even going to come out of its containment. It's going to be double and triple contained. So the odds of it being released to begin with are extremely low. And if it does happen, it's a localized incident that can be cleaned up. The biggest thing is the cleanup crew has to have proper training and proper protection equipment just to ensure they don't get exposed to directly exposed to the medical waste. There. And then lastly, agenda item 30, which also got moved up, is a variance request for the building setbacks for this property. ECO is requesting that a variance to the 50-foot building setback requirement be granted. mainly because the facility, it's this very kind of odd crescent shaped, long, and if we have to have 50-foot setbacks on every side of the property, it makes it a pretty undevelopable property. So we're requesting a variance on the south side here from that 50-foot setback requirement. And we believe that it's the type of the property where it's located, the building and everything still it still meets the intent of those setbacks and won't create a dangerous situation for any for the public or surrounding businesses. That's all we got for you. So I'm here to answer questions, and the other folks that I mentioned earlier are here to answer any questions or concerns you you guys might have. We thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Did you have any more? Any other questions, Chad? Do you have other facilities other than this one you plan on building in Stark County?
This will be a first-of-its-kind facility with the technology it's using. There are other more archaic and older facilities that handle medical waste, but nothing near in the way we do that it's going to be done here. They're incinerators, and so they're very dirty and old and quite honestly kind of unpermittable in today's
environment. Are they in our vicinity?
Oh, no, nothing around here.
Is there anything in the Reno Sparks Lake Tahoe area?
Not on an industrial commercial scale.
So currently everything else has to be sent out of state to another.
Yeah, I think the biggest facility is in Maryland. That's where lots of this waste goes. Even from all the way on the West Coast, it makes it all the way to Maryland.
Okay. So upon getting this facility up and running, then you'll be importing waste.
There will be more waste than just what's produced here in Nevada, but lots of that waste is going down the 80 already.
Okay. All right.
But yes, to answer your question, yeah, waste from other states will certainly.
Very good. All right. Very good presentation. Well, we go ahead and we'll open up for a public comment. Anybody like to comment on this item? It's a real exciting one. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless there are any objections from you, Commissioner McGuffey, I'll ask Kathy to go ahead and read the findings of fact in the affirmative for this.
It's kind of funny to ask this question.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. All right, the findings of fact for motion for approval. This approval is for special use permit 2017-044, a request by the applicant Eco Compliance Corporation to construct and operate a medical waste thermal destruction plant and potential commercial power generation from waste. The subject property is located at 475 Pittsburgh Avenue, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, McCarran, Story County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number APN 005-05154. The special use permit conforms to the 2016 Story County Master Plan for the McCarran planning area in which the subject property is located. A discussion supporting this finding for the special use permit is provided in Section 2E of the staff report, and the contents thereof are cited in an approval of the special use permit. The subject property is located within an existing industrial neighborhood in the McCarran area of Story County. The zoning is based on the 1999 Story County Zoning Ordinance, which identifies this property as I-2 heavy industrial. The proposed medical waste thermal destruction plant is defined as a recycling facilities and operations involving use, recovery, or residue, of hazardous materials and or waste, and requires a special use permit. Granting of a special use permit with the conditions of approval listed in Section 4 of this report will not, under the circumstances of the particular case, adversely affect to a material degree the health or safety of persons' property in the neighborhood of the subject property. The project is expected to meet the safety and health requirements for the subject area. The use will also be subject to building and fire plan review in order to ensure compliance with federal, state, and other codes. The special use permit will not impose substantial adverse impacts of safety hazards on the abutting properties or the surrounding area, and it will comply with all federal, state, and county regulations. The conditions under the special use permit do not conflict with the minimum requirements in the 1999 Story County Zoning Ordinance Section 17.37, I-2 Heavy Industrial, and 17.62 Special Uses. Granting of the special use permit will not, under the circumstances of the particular case, adversely affect to a material degree the health or safety of persons working in the neighborhood or area of the subject property, and will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to property improvements in the neighborhood or area of the subject property.
Very good. Great. Thank you, Kathy. All right. With that said, I'll ask one more time if there's any public comment regarding this item. Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve.
In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the Planning Commission, the findings of facts under Section 3.A of this report and other findings deemed appropriate by the Board of County Commissioners and in compliance with the conditions of approval, High County Commissioner Jack McGuffey moved to approve special use permit number 2017-044, a request by applicant Eco Compliance Corporation to construct and operate a medical waste thermal destruction plant and potential commercial power generation from waste. The subject property is located at 475 Pittsburgh Avenue, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, McCarran, Story County, Nevada, assessors parcel number 005-051-54.
I second your motion. It's been moved and second to approve special use permit 2017-044. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, we're going to move on now. Part two of this is going to be item number 30. Commissioner Gilman?
Yes.
Are you going to recuse yourself on this as well?
Item 30?
Yes. It has to do with the same piece of property.
Say again, sorry.
It has to do with the same piece of property?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for that. I will recuse and not join the discussion because I have a pecuniary interest in that.
Very good. Okay, this is variance 2017-046 request. The applicant requests a variance to the required 50-foot south yard setback, allowing the south setback area to be reduced to 15 feet for the portion of the principal building being a mechanical room, and to 35 feet for the remainder of the principal building's south exterior wall. This variance does not apply to any other side of the subject building or property. The property is located within the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center at 475 Pittsburgh Avenue, McCarran, Story County, Nevada. Assessor's parcel number 8PN005-051-54. All right. Ms.
Okay. As the applicant discussed earlier, the project itself has a parcel that's kind of like a half circle, for lack of a better description. The circular or the arc portion is actually where the Union Pacific Railroad lines are. So the limits of being able to expand that parcel over those lines weren't very feasible. And then when you put the 50-foot setbacks within the parcels themselves, you get a very small window of area to construct within those setbacks. The applicant has proposed a 15-foot setback for a small mechanical room that's added onto the building and a 35-foot setback along the Pittsburgh Avenue frontage for that building. The property that's across the street has already been developed, and the closest building is about approximately 300 plus feet from where this building would be. So the separation between the buildings is rather significant. Whereas with the 50-foot setbacks or trying to push the building closer to the railroad, I think that has more potential for interference than it actually does from where they're proposing it to be. So staff is supportive of the variance because of the parcel shape, and the Planning Commission was also recommended approval.
Okay. Do you have any questions for Kathy?
No. I guess I have a question regarding growth. If the company were to try to grow, would they have room to expand?
I can actually have the applicant.
Tony, do you
want to
come up and address that?
Tony Dimple with McGinley & Associates.
Well, you're in tight quarters as it is, so do you foresee wanting to expand the business?
On that particular property?
Yeah.
It's foreseeable. I mean, if the demand is there, but the current plans is for that one building. And then there is room to the west, I mean, where that current parking lot is over there. So I would say there's definitely a potential.
Yeah. Is it, you're talking to the, you don't have your map up, the parking lot that was to the left there?
Yeah, we're, yeah, I just want to.
Oh, okay, so you can move that way if you had to.
Yeah, that could go away. Yeah, certainly. So we're kind of, it's almost, we're almost on just half the property now.
Right.
And so if any expansion did occur, that suit along the property, it'd almost probably be just a mirror of what's already there.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Kathy, so with the recommendation to approve these reduced setbacks, you don't see any potential for any encroachment on anyone else's property?
The property that's directly across is Pittsburgh's Paints.
Okay.
And this is kind of a, it's hard to tell with the picture, but it's a, it has some of a hill right here. So that's the feasibility of them building on that portion. They would have a 50-foot setback also.
Okay.
But the feasibility of them building on that with their development.
So it wouldn't hinder the expansion of Pittsburgh Paint or anybody else?
No, no.
Okay.
And if I may, Pittsburgh Paint nor anybody else within the notification distance has voiced any concerns or objections through this process?
Correct. We didn't receive any notices from the public.
Okay. Thank you. Any public comment? Okay. No public comment? Any objections from here? I ask Cassie to read the findings of fact for the motion to approve.
All right. This approval is for the applicant's request for a variance to the required 50-foot south yard setback, allowing the south setback area to be reduced to 15 feet for a portion of the principal building being a mechanical room, and to 35 feet for the remainder of the principal building's south exterior wall. This variance does not apply to any other side of the subject building or property. Property is located within the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center at 475 Pittsburgh Avenue, McCarran, Story County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number APN 005-05154. The subject property is located within the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center and is subject to the development agreement between Story County and the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. The 1999 Story County Zoning Ordinance I-2 Heavy Industrial Zoning applies to the property. The property is currently vacant. A medical waste thermal destruction plan is proposed for the property. Special use permit filed 2017-044. That because of special circumstances applicable to the subject property, including the shape, size, topography, or location of surroundings, the strict application of the zoning ordinance would deprive the subject property of privileges enjoyed by other properties in the vicinity or under identical zone classifications. But the granting of the variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of the substantial property rights of the applicant. That the granting of the variance will not, under the circumstances of the particular case, adversely affect to a material degree the health or safety of persons residing or working in the area of the subject property, and will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to property or improvements in the area of the subject property. The proposed variance is in compliance with all federal, Nevada, state, and Story County regulations. The proposed variance is in compliance with the 1999 Story County Zoning Code, Story County Code 17.60 variances and 17.37 I-2 heavy industrial zones when all conditions of approval are met. The proposed variance is in compliance with and supports the goals, objectives, and policies of the 2016 Story County Master Plan.
Thank you, Kathy. All righty. Can I get a motion for approval?
Sure. In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the Planning Commission, the findings of fact under Section 3.8 of this report and other findings deemed appropriate by the Board of County Commissioners and in compliance with the conditions of approval, I, County Commissioner Jack McGuffey, move to approve the variance request number 2017-046 for a variance to the required 50-foot south yard setback, allowing the south setback area to be reduced to 15 feet for a portion of the principal building being a mechanical room and to 35 feet for the remainder of the principal building south exterior wall. This variance does not apply to any other side of the subject building or property. This property is located within the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center at 475 Pittsburgh Avenue, McCarran, Story County, Nevada, assessor's parcel number 005-051-54.
Okay. Thanks, Jax. I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve variance 2017-046. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. All right. Good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome to Story County.
Yeah.
Okay, next up is going to be item number 12, and we're going to go ahead and take just about a 5-minute recess here, okay? A little pause for the cause.